Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast. My name is Paul Ellis, and I'm your host for these programs about developments in this fast-growing industry. As head of Sustainable Finance Americas for Société Générale Corporate and Investment Banking, Marie-Clara Bullion is charged with solving the challenges of making public and private capital work together to scale clean energy solutions in the required timelines. The Société Générale Sustainable Finance team develops ESG strategies and programs that meet with key stakeholder expectations and best practices, such as TCFD, SASB, GRB Global Reporting Initiative, UNPRI, and CDP. She manages teams and projects across geographies and joins me as our podcast guest today to discuss approaches to clean energy technology solutions that she has seen work across multiple sectors of the global economy. Hello, Marie Clara, and welcome to the Sustainable Finance Podcast.
It's a pleasure to be here, Paul, with you, and I look forward to spending the next hour.
Yes, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to have you as our guest. We met at the Greenfin Summit, didn't we? That's if I'm remembering correctly, and you were on one of the panels there discussing these issues. So it's a great opportunity for us to have you with us as an individual speaker for the podcast. And we're going to jump right into the questions that we have. And the first one is, what differences do you see between the United States and the European approaches to incorporating sustainability considerations into financing and capital allocation decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pleasure to answer this question because I feel very privileged to really sit at the fault line, you know, working for a large European bank in the US market and seeing both sides of the Atlantic. And of course, many of our clients operate in jurisdictions both in the US and in Europe. And so before we talk about the differences, I think it's important to recall that we at the end of the day looking at the same issues, right? We're looking at the issues of climate, nature, societal and social issues, and how they impact corporate decision-making and you know, financial performance. And here, it's really important to take a moment to reflect on the different regulatory and legal background.
Right? Yes,
think
for sure.
About, you know, the different European nations, you know, while there's many differences among all of them, when you look at the different environmental standards, labor requirements, the list goes on, they tend to be more stringent to begin with, certainly if you compare it with the US federal level. And that, of course, creates a very different operating environment that businesses operate in and how they think about that. I think the other key difference that I see is societal expectation. You know, I mentioned a moment ago, I just spent 10 days in Europe and really struck me how omnipresent the climate discussion is, you know, in public discourse, in private conversations, in election campaigns, and it's visible, you know, within the first hour of being there, you know, you really see, you know, the public infrastructure that has been invested in, you know, through that climate lens, right? The transportation, electricity, and so forth. So that just creates a very different environment in which corporates in Europe make financial decision here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That being said, you know, it creates a very top-down approach, right? If you think about all this national requirements, you think about the European, you know, the Fit for 50-50, the border adjustment mechanism, the EU ETS, and so forth. It creates a very top-down, you know, compliance-driven approach, which, you know, and it's not a clear dichotomy, but if you want to put a trade for the sake of the conversation, it's very different than much more of a bottom-up, market-driven approach that you have in the US. And I think the Inflation Reduction Act and really looking to fuel those market dynamics, you know, is a good example of that. So you can see, right, like both approaches, you know, produce different ways of going about it. But again, it's at the end of the day, we're looking at the same issues. We're looking at how does climate as social issues impact financial decision making. And here, I think it's also important to think about that while there's a lot of good that comes with having very stringent regulation, driving compliance is very different to a market-driven approach, right, where it really focuses more innovation. And I think this is, you know, in absence of a price on carbon in particular, that innovation piece is so critical. So again, you know, if I bring it together, it's very different regulatory and societal backdrops. But at the end of the day, we're looking at the same issues. And I think both sides together, you know, bring some very important nuances to the conversation.
You know, I'm just thinking about something, and I can't, I don't think I've tried to incorporate this perspective into my own thinking about these differences in terms of regulatory issues and top-down or bottom-up, but there are many American corporations that do a lot of business in the EU. And I know that there's guidelines and that they have to follow when they're doing business there that are just the same as every other European corporation. So do you probably have clients for the bank that are in both markets, right? I'm assuming that that's the case.
Yes. No, exactly. And this is kind of where, you know, so much about sustainability goes beyond legal requirement, right? Like really, when you think about, you know, what is the role of business here is not just complying with the law, but really, you know, saying where can you go beyond, you know, to make it better for your employees, better for your customers, better for your suppliers, and at the end of the day, better for your investors, you know, as well. And so this is, you know, where, you know, as you point out, and I think that regulatory patchwork that a lot of multinationals that, you know, headquartered in the US but have operations in Europe and beyond need to increasingly navigate, right? Where, you know, for such a long time, certainly on the disclosure front, you know, investors and everyone was keen to have more regulation, but now it's here and it's a patchwork. You know, the different jurisdictions going in different speeds and different scopes. So it's certainly, you know, a challenge. How do you navigate this without alienating or creating issues in other areas?
Yes, I would imagine for an international banking company like yours, there's a lot of consideration on both sides before you make decisions about making investments. And so how can corporates and project sponsors incorporate climate risk considerations into their work with your sustainability team at Société Générale?
Yeah, two things I would point out here to begin with, and this is such a key question to all of this, is one is really understanding the financial impact challenges, right? We know the notion that climate is impacting business and is increasingly going to impact to do so, but really what are the financial impact challenges, channels? How does it impact my revenue? Does it impact my costs, right? If I have my supply chain in that part of the world, and the physical climate risk is increasing, how does this increase and change my cost structure, right? If I think about, you know, transition risk, you know, different consumer preferences and so forth, how is this going to impact my revenue? And what we see here is, you know, we work with some of the largest corporations. A lot of the work has been done, you know, certainly in the procurement space. A lot of work has been done in specific business lines and on specific projects, but bringing it all together, particularly through that lens of this is my business today, what's my business going to look like in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years, you know, it's really bringing that together and really, you know, finding a way to identify those financial impact challenges. And then as a next step, really translate that into financial planning, right? So if you think about, you know, your typical, you know, financial planning horizon for your US corporate is 5 years. Right. So if you think about some of the key decarbonization technologies needed or when those decarbonization challenges need to be addressed, a lot of them lie outside the five-year time horizon if we sit here today. So how do you start thinking about incorporating then? So when you make those decisions today, you don't lock yourself in and really create the maximum amount of financial flexibility there and really start, you know, making the decisions now, even though, you know, they strictly speaking, in a traditional financial sense, would fall outside your key consideration.
Yes, well, that brings up the next question, which is the role of finance and the banking sector in climate transition planning for both corporates and project sponsors. So as you say, Marie, you're often planning multi-year projects, in fact, projects that don't even begin up to five years or longer. And of course, the regulatory environment is going to keep shifting and changing along with the impact of climate change related to that. So what role is the banking and finance sector playing in climate transition for corporates and project sponsors that you work with on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I would segment that answer into two parts. Like one is, you know, concrete climate solutions, right? What, you know, if you look at our own, you know, finance emissions, what do we want our own portfolio to look like? What do we need it to look like? What are some of the industries, but even within industry, what are some of the activities we're looking to channel the funding we have available towards to, you know, of course, also have, you know, a sustainable finance goal, which is, again, like looking to, you know, promote and finance and make financing of certain activities, you know, more attractive. You know, and this is, of course, you know, renewable energy. It is the battery value chain. It is consumer and agriculture. It is you know, those activities, real estate. So it's these you know, in that directly finance the transition, that directly you know, channel the funding to those activities that are compatible with a low carbon economy. And the second part is more, you know, what so far the significant part is, how do you factor in climate risk in those activities that don't necessarily fall into those green activities, if you will? And this is where a lot of the true transition work lies, right? So if you think about, you know, cement or steel and so forth, there's very few, or farmer chemicals, you name it, there's few substitutes, right, compared to energy. And so it really comes down to, what does decarbonization look like for this activity in that market, in that geography, and how, what is the backdrop? You know, is there a cap and trade system? Does the activity fall under this? That, of course, changes the economics of what decarbonization levers make financially, you know, sense and so forth. So it's those two elements, I would say. Like one, you know, financing, you know, green technologies and activities to begin with, and then the other one is, you know, for all those activities that don't neatly fall into those categories, how do we incorporate this? How do we make the economics work?
Yes, now, and of course, as with all longer range planning, the insurance sector gets involved in these processes, right? And so tell us about what kind of work, you know, no names, of course, but in what type of work that your bank is doing with insurance companies to develop climate-specific de-risking strategies for your corporate and project sponsor clients.
Yeah, I would, you know, of course, you know, we have insurance clients, but I would like to answer the question how it impacts, you know, our corporate clients, but also project sponsors, right?
Sure, sure.
How we see the climate change crisis play out for the insurance sector, you know, what markets, you know, do we see insurance companies pull out already because the economics, you know, don't, you know, work anymore, you know, given the financial impact due to a significant in weather events. You know, if you look at the projects, right, the project finance teams we work at, you really see, depending on, you know, if you look at the life cycle of you know, a typical infrastructure project, we're looking at decades to come. And so here, really increasingly, we see that not only mitigation factored in, but adaptation just as much, right? And when once you start thinking about that, it also becomes a site selection, you know, how likely are significant weather events going to take place in that specific location? Do you need to get additional insurance? you know, to make the financing work? What does it mean for my resale value down the line? You know, is there going to be insurance available for the operations? And so forth. So that, you know, we see increasingly taking shape, and same for our corporate clients as well. You know, for very long, insurance was almost like an afterthought, where you know you did your project, you planned your activity, and so forth, and then you went out and got insurance for it. And now, you know, we're, you know, it's still select markets work, but this is only expected to increase, where it's not guaranteed that you have insurance to begin with, or you have insurance at a rate where the economics can work. It needs to become, you know, much more front and center of the planning to begin with. And that's certainly something we see changing as we speak.
Yes, of course. And the insurance sector is coming up with a whole new group of kinds of coverage related to specific mitigation and adaptation aspects for climate change. Can you tell us about any of the assets or liabilities that this type of coverage is being used to de-risk in your business?
Yeah, I think the way we see it play out in our business is also, you know, think about the insurance business, if you will. There's like, of course, the insurance business, but then there's also the asset management business that comes with that, right? And with increased payouts, what needs to happen on the asset management side and the returns that need to come from that, you know, change with that. And here, that's where we see it changing, but in terms of concrete products, it's not so much that we would work with them. They come up with the those, but then it comes out with the financing that we can provide to them, you know, given how their business plan is going forward.
We work with a large asset manager. It's a global asset manager, and they are developing whole new platforms within their asset management firm that are focused on how to work with the insurance needs that are being caused by and generated with focus on climate change. So it's certainly becoming a much more complex and in terms of the asset management, which you mentioned, those whole processes have to be reconfigured today and probably every few years at least going forward. So, Maria, a significant challenge in transition financing is scaling the financing required in the appropriate time frame. So whether you're working with an insurance company or a project manager, or it's just, you know, a corporation that you're lending money to through the bank, what can be done to further scale financing for decarbonization, particularly among high emitting sectors that you, a couple of which you've mentioned, like steel, cement, et cetera?
Yeah, yes. So for, you know, the high emitting clients to begin with is, you know, one of the hurdles, and it's a practical hurdle and not so much a financing hurdle, but it's really creating the internal decision-making processes, right? Where you really link the work that has been done in the sustainability team with the work that's been done in the finance team and develop this shared language where you're saying, you know, this is a particular decarbonization challenge that we have. How can we make the financing work, right? And in many cases, it's going to look different, you know, than, you know, what the financing teams are being used to, because the technology is new. So you might want to tap into, you know, let's say the Department of Energy loan program office, for instance, you know, for some of the newer technologies. It might need to be, you know, bundling with some of your peers, you know, so the scale is there to make, you know, those technological advances possible. So it's available at market scale. And it's also, you know, even if we take a step back, you know, we talked a moment ago about those financial impact challenges, and you really, what does the math look like? You know, what does the time frame look like? What are the different marginal abatement costs, right, that we're looking at? And, you know, if you look at technologies 5 to 10 or even 15 years out, the anyone's best guess, really. So how do you tweak them, work with them, so they become credible assumptions for you that you can start, making those financial decisions on. I think the other, and that's, if we think about, you want to, have a new factory build out and incorporate those. At the end of the day, how do the economics work? How can you make this, by either creating new processes that really give you a differentiating factor? For instance, that's an opportunity for a lot of the commodities. If you can make this work and create a differentiated product where the low carbon footprint, the carbon footprint is lower than the rest of your the commodities you're competing with, that's an opportunity for differentiation there. So that's one part. The other piece here is, and I think this is particularly from a commercial bank perspective, I think 80% of the technologies, if you follow the International Energy Agency, 80% of the technologies that are needed to decarbonize, to reach the net zero goals are already available, known, but it's one thing to have a technology that's proven to work, to make it available at large scale. And so this is another piece there. If you have a proven technology, there's so many other aspects that make that proven technology marketable. Do you have offtake agreements? What's the how do you get financing before you've built the project side for you, and so forth? That's a real challenge, right? And that's where we see commercial banks really cautiously moving down the technology maturity curve, to make it work with their own risk requirements, to make it on with their own financial need. And so this is again where public-private partnerships can be a very effective ways of overcoming some of those, right? Where you get a grant from the Department of Energy that can take care and the risk, some of the technology take away some of the technology risk and make it fit into the commercial banking side. And indeed the other piece, when you think about where a lot of the decarbonization challenges lie, they're of course all over the world, but a lot of them are in not in Europe, not in the US, where a lot of the funding is, but in large parts of the world where funding is even more tight. So this is another piece, we think about some of our large corporate clients who have value in supply chains all over the world. How can you, come up with structures that provide funding for decarbonization challenges in their value chain, that incentivize and provide the financial conditions that make it accessible as well. So one example there is to set up a facility where a high investment grade U.S. headquartered corporate would extend the creditworthiness, would extend its creditworthiness to that facility. And the cheaper financing that the suppliers can tap into in that facility can be used to do upgrades in terms of saving energy in operations and so forth. So that's one aspect. It of course needs to be we need to use the whole toolbox there. But it's really not keeping. If we think about the just transition, and we can't. We have to keep the rest of the world, front and center, and kind of what can we do there as well?
Yes, it was only a few years ago where nobody was giving any thought to how much energy AI centers were going to consume. And now that's a big question with all of the large technology companies as well, as I'm sure you know, because you work with all of them. And we're going to see more and more of those kinds of considerations going forward. From what you're saying is my perspective on how this is going to continue to unfold. So best wishes for success to you and your company in negotiating all of these kinds of issues. Marie Clara, where online can followers of the Sustainable Finance Podcast go to learn more about Societe Generale corporate and investment banking? And how can they reach you with questions about the topics that we've discussed in this episode?
Yeah, my pleasure. First, we have Societe Generale's website where we have much more information on our sector targets, and the way we look to reduce our emissions across our portfolio, sustainable finance targets, our emerging leader envelope where we're looking to, fund emerging technologies that help the decarbonization journey, as well as the work that we do, and specific case studies there as well.
Okay, and we're certainly happy to post any materials, any links or studies or anything else that you'd like to send us at our Bright Talk and YouTube sites where our followers can dig deeper into the work that you're doing on their own. And I want to thank you again, Marie Clara Bullingen, Head of Sustainable Finance Americas at Societe Generale, for joining me in today's episode of the Sustainable Finance Podcast. And our followers can join me again next week for another episode. I'm Paul Ellis, your host, and this is the Sustainable Finance Podcast, which is now available at our recently launched YouTube site as well.